I'm sorry, I can't talk. Zombies, I'm running from zombie. But hey, once I get my breath back, Madiva episode 206 is with Matt Viatesca of Six to Start, who cast the audio drama part of... No, get off my brain. Zombies, run! Okay, I have with me the amazing Matt Viatesca from Six to Start, Zombies Run, also credited to the amazing Naomi Alderman. Hello, Matt, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me
It's
on.
Very exciting to speak to you. I hope you're not being chased at the moment. Are you in between runs? Yes?
No, I'm quite safe. We're well fortified.
Hooray! Yes, I'm under my duvet. I don't think it's much protection, but I could always hit them with the mic, I suppose. So, question one for you, which I think is on everybody's lips. Where would you go to if there was an actual zombie outbreak, and who would you take with you?
Well, I'd definitely take my wife and my 8-week-old daughter. They'd be the first people in the back of the car.
But that's not to offer them up first for sacrifice, is it? No, that's
no,
to
no,
protect
no,
them.
No, no,
okay, just checking,
not.
Just checking.
But I think my sister lives in quite a remote community in the Highlands, on the west coast of Scotland, where she and her partner have a farm and a few acres of woodland. And
nice.
It's a village where there's the classic murder mystery setup of there's only one way in and one way out.
Cool.
So it's the kind of place that would be very easy to at least know if the zombies were coming.
Yep.
Defending it would maybe be a different question, but we'd have a lot of warning.
Fair enough.
And there's a lot of boats there as well, so I think that'd be a good exit point as well.
Cool.
Mainly also because then I could rely on my sister to grow all my food for me, which I'm capable of doing on my own.
This is it. My fear would be M1 or M6, though. I don't know. Anyway. But yes, so you are, amongst other things, responsible for doing the amazing app, which hopefully folks of a fitness-oriented nature might have heard of, called Zombies Run by Six to Start. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, Naomi Alderman, who writes and also has a lot to do with the creation of it.
Yep.
Where did that idea come from? How did you kick off with that?
Well, that was it was a joint endeavor really by Naomi and my boss Adrian. I've been working at Six to Start since about 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Back then we were a digital agency, so we made games for other people.
Right.
So I joined to help make a sort of treasure hunt for Wired magazine.
Uh-huh.
And we also made similar games for the BBC, for Channel 4, and a whole bunch of other companies. But then Adrian's a very, very keen runner, and he'd wanted to make a game about running for a while.
Mm.
And this was around 2011-ish, was around when the iPhone and the iPad were sort of coming onto the scene. The App Store was first released, and games as apps was a kind of growing sector, something that was a lot of exciting work was being done in. So Adrian had this kind of, you know, idea that he wanted to make a game that focused on running, and maybe a game you could play while you were running.
Mm.
And at the same time, Naomi had attended a beginner's running club, basically, in I think it was in a local park. I'm not sure. I don't want to tell her story for her.
Yeah.
But the story as she told it to me was that at the beginning of this sort of running course, the instructor sort of asked everybody why they wanted to get fit, why they wanted to improve their fitness.
Mm.
And the, you know, people sort of gave various answers, like, you know, feeling better in their own body, or kind of not getting out of breath when they go up the stairs, or, you know, hoping to stick around longer to see their children grow up, or, you know, a lot of very kind of good fitness
emotive reasons.
Yeah, and then one person at the back of the group stuck her hand up and said, I want to make sure I survive the zombie apocalypse. And I think that little seed stuck in Naomi's head. And then when she and Adrian had one of their many very regular conversations, Adrian maybe mentioned his running game idea. The two were sort of married, and that's where the idea for what about a running game where you're running away from zombies came from.
See,
so yeah, that's where it came
I
from.
I love it. I absolutely adore that, the whole idea of it. And you may be wondering, folks listening, why on earth we're talking about this for the point of view of voice actors. Well, there is quite a huge contingent of the app's excitement down to various voice actors lending their voices to creating scenes and scenarios that you run along listening to.
Mm-hmm.
So, Matt, how does your casting process work for this kind of event? Because you obviously have quite a fun range of characters that the runners can listen to. You're not interacting as such. You're not talking back or reacting to things in some ways. But yes, can you explain to us the kind of character ranges you have and what casting process is like?
Yeah, basically, just to sort of give a quick summary of how the game works, you head out running with your headphones in, and we alternate between playing you a scene from the story and a track from your running playlist, so you kind of have some narrative interspersed with some music to help you keep up your pace while you're running.
Yes.
And occasionally while you're listening to music, you hear a word that tells you that you're being chased by zombies,
mm-hmm.
and you have to increase your pace in order to escape from the zombies or bad things happen. But yeah, crucially, as Sarah said, there's no interaction between the player and the narrative. That's because we didn't want people to be looking at their phones while they're running, because it's really not safe. So we really tried to design an experience that was as safe for people as possible,
yes.
and played into the strengths of the running experience, which is that you are doing all the work with your body, and the place you're in helps tell the story. But we're just there to make your run as interesting as possible by letting you live through this story in which you are the main character, Runner 5. So what I always say to the actors when we bring them in for casting is,
yes.
from our point of view, really, and I say our point of view, I mean my point of view, I'm the audio director. I manage all the audio production, and I also do the actual in-booth direction of all the actors.
You get all the fun jobs.
I get all the hot hours in the dark. So yeah, so my side of things really is, from my point of view at least, is very, very, it's very much the same as a radio drama, as any other BBC produced or podcast produced independent radio drama. And that means that my number one priority when we're casting and when we're recording is to find very human, very believable, very organic and realistic performances. So a lot of the time with games, maybe not so much nowadays when a story's being given a lot more weight in games nowadays, but certainly past decade or so, voice acting in games tended to primarily reside in quite a cartoonish register. The characters that were in games, they're there to be your kind of your companions and your kind of your fun amplifiers,
yes.
and they're there to be the audience bridge and tell you how to feel, and as a result their job is often to emote in very primary colours and to really sell things in this larger than life kind of register. Especially in the kind of, what I always think of as the kind of the brown games of the early 2000s, your things like your Gears of War and your Calls of Duty,
yes.
and these games that were very hyper-masculine, and they were often very, very kind of big characters. But from my point of view, what we try and do with Zombies Run and with all our other games is find the kind of the quieter, the more human register in there. Because the experience of listening to what we make is often very intimate,
yeah.
you know, while you're running, all you have with you is these voices in your ears. So that's quite a lot of trust that you place in us emotionally. I feel like we have a duty of care to make sure that we're not just screaming and shouting and swearing in your ear holes.
Yeah.
And how that translates to casting really is the process has changed quite a bit actually, because my circumstances have changed, to be frank.
Yes.
So about 2 years ago, my wife and I moved out of London so that we could buy a house, which we couldn't afford to do in London. And we moved up to Edinburgh, which is where I live now.
Beautiful city.
So as a result, the casting process had to change, because the vast majority of the sort of professional acting industry in the UK is based in London. Most actors live in London or very nearby, and all of our recording happens in London, so it wouldn't do me much good to be casting actors who live in Scotland anyway. So prior to the move, when we were in London, the way the casting worked was I would put up a job description, a call out on a casting website. So we used to use Casting Call Pro.
Yep.
It's now called Manly.
Secret bit in the middle of the podcast. Hello. So that not everybody finds this by just listening to the beginning or the end, I just wanted to pop in to say I went to see Mandy.com. The people who are some of the coolest folks to be supporting actors in the industry on all different mediums. And because they're so lovely, they've offered Mediva listeners 2 months free. Yes, it means you can apply for all the jobs there and hopefully crack on and get all of the perks. So to get that, when it asks you for any kind of prompt of code authorization-wise or otherwise, type in pod offer, all one thing, in capital letters, and you'll get 2 months free. How exciting is that? Good luck. Okay, back to the interview.
And I would, so the call would go up with the details of characters and the recording dates usually and the fee, you know, the usual sort of logistical bump about the job. And I would wait about a week and my inbox on Casting Call Pro would become incredibly overstuffed with people. I think usually for 10, say 10 parts, we usually end up with about 1,200 applicants.
My goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a sad state of affairs, really, that there isn't a lot of paid entry-level acting work.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that I think, you know, I always want to pay people more. And, you know, we could be talking about Glenn Close's salary, and I'd always want to pay her more. But yeah, we tended to be one of the few jobs that were accessible to people who were in the early days of their career, maybe hadn't quite had their big break, but still had a lot of talent. But we did, you know, we do pay, you know, we make sure that people...
Huzzah! Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We make sure that people aren't ever losing out coming to work for us, basically. They aren't doing us a favour.
Yeah, it's not there. Yeah, it costs 40 quid to get into London.
Exactly. So that's always been really important to me, to make sure that we're doing the best we can by our actors. Mm. Anyway, so as a result, we'd often get a lot of applicants. Mm. And stop me when I get into too much detail, by the way. I could talk about
it. No, detail is fantastic. That's what I yearn for, yes. Because, I mean, how on earth do you whittle it down? I mean, that amount of applicants, my goodness. Is it just you listening to all of those?
Well, surprisingly, the first step is actually just going through and sort of turning down everyone who doesn't have a voice reel or a show reel.
Uh-huh.
And that is a genuinely surprisingly large proportion of people.
Wow, okay.
I would say easily half the applicants don't have a reel of any description.
Right. There you go, people. Listen to our earlier episodes on making reels and go get yours done.
Yes. you know, frankly, there's no way for me to know anything about you if you don't have a reel. I'm always wanting to give people opportunities. I always want to find someone new and be surprised by somebody, to be honest. That's just not possible if there's none of your work on display. So the first call would just be declining everybody who doesn't have a reel. And then the second one would be I'd watch or listen to everybody's reels. And everybody would basically get, and this sounds harsh, but everyone would get 20 seconds.
Okay.
I mean, within 20 seconds, I need to have seen or heard some demonstration of your acting ability. And this sounds, again, like a very low bar to clear, but a lot of showreels especially begin with a long card, which is just the person's name, and then some pop music over a montage of this person walking into shot. Sometimes it takes a minute to get to the person actually speaking. If I spent a minute watching every one of the showreels that got sent to me, I would spend over a week of full-time work casting just to get down to people I would even think about looking at again.
Okay. So brilliant top tip there, yes.
The first thing in your reel, from my point of view at least, just from my personal point of view, is it should be your best scene, basically.
Right.
And it should be short, but it should be good. And then after that is when I want montages, I want a demonstration of your breadth, I want a demonstration of your ability to change what you're doing quickly, that kind of stuff. But I just need to hear you act in the first 10 seconds is the first thing. Yeah. Because if I don't know that you can do that, then the way I always think about it is, if I'm spending a minute on a bad showreel to find out that it's bad, that's a minute I'm not spending on a good reel finding out that person is worth a shot.
Yep.
So I owe it to all the good people who aren't getting seen to make sure that I'm not wasting my time on people who aren't demonstrating their ability.
Yes.
I'm not setting these kind of hard limits to be cruel or to be dismissive. I'm doing it out of kindness to the people who don't get seen otherwise.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a really important tip, I think, is from my point of view at least. the very first thing should be some demonstration of your ability to act.
How you whittle it down next, so you've got your list of folks who generally impressed you, then obviously you have a specific cast that you need to cast. So
well, we basically I'd look at all the show reels that are still there, and yeah, pick out the people who I think can act. That's a nebulous proposition. We could probably talk for 2 hours about that as well, but for the sake of brevity, I whittle that down to usually what I'm aiming for is to see 10 people in person for each part that we cast.
Yep.
Again, this is back when I was based in London and I could afford the time to do that. Mm. So I would bring people in for a 15-minute audition slot. I would send them one scene in advance, which they would prepare. The way the audition would work is they would come in, they would perform that scene, I would read opposite them for any other parts, and then no matter how good their performance was, I would give them some notes. Usually it ended up being pretty much the same note for every person performing the same character, just because that's the way it always tends to work out. There's always something there that people tend to miss. But the purpose of giving them a note in the audition is not to try and get a better performance out of them particularly, because we're not recording them. It's of no use to me to get the perfect performance in the audition booth. But the real reason to give notes is to see how well the actor takes them.
Yeah.
And to see how well my notes work for them.
Okay.
Every director is different, every actor is different, and sometimes it could be the best actor in the world with the best director in the world, but if they're not on the same page, then it's just not going to be a fruitful relationship.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, yeah.
So really, it's almost a little bit like meeting a new flatmate or something. You just need to make sure you're on the same page more than anything.
Yes.
So yeah, I give them a little note and we talk for a minute or two and they do the scene again. Mm-hmm. And really what I'm looking for there is how well did they take the note on board? So did they manage to bring the note to life? You know, did they do what I was asking?
Yep.
But more than that, the situation where I usually get very excited to cast someone straight away is when I give them a note and then they find something additional. And me giving them a note has sparked their creative process.
Yes, yeah.
It's very important to me that actors aren't puppets. They aren't cardboard cutouts, you know.
Yeah, free will is important, yes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But also, it's the most valuable thing that an actor brings into the room is their judgment. Mm. And that's what I think is worth bringing in, is someone with a different creative perspective, someone with a different point of view, someone with a different understanding of the character, so that when you find moments that are really worth digging into, that you really want to sink your teeth into, you can have a conversation and you can find something that is the shared truth between the three of you, by which I mean the writer, the director and the actor. That's the three people that are always present, really. Mm-hmm. I don't mean literally, by the way. The writers aren't in the booth with us when we record, but right. I mean sort of metaphorically, the script is there,
yes,
the director's there and the actor's there. So there's, yeah, that's when we do our best work, is when all three of those people are in the conversation. Mm. So the best result in an audition is that after I give somebody a note, they then run with it a little bit further and then they surprise me in some way with some new interpretation of the line that was opened up by our conversation. Mm. And then the final thing that we do in the audition is give them a blind reading. So
yep.
I just give them a little, usually about a page of dialogue.
How exciting to get something else to get your teeth into. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, the main thing there actually is I just give them a minute or two to read it through. But the key thing is I'm not necessarily too worried about the actual performance in that scene. The main thing I'm looking for is to see if they can think on their feet, but also if they can actually read quickly.
Okay.
One of the things that we fell foul of in an earlier project a few years ago was we had an actor who was absolutely fantastic, genuinely incredible performer, brought this character to life like, you know, we couldn't really have hoped for. He was really, really brilliant.
Yep.
But turned out that he wasn't able to read as quickly as was necessary, really, to record at the speed that we do.
Right. Yes.
And you know, he has some problems reading live at that speed. Mm. And he'd actually memorized all the scripts for his audition.
Wow.
And because at that time we weren't doing a blind read in the room, we didn't know until he turned up to record with us that he had these kind of extra requirements around reading scripts.
Okay.
And that meant that we weren't prepared for that. The schedule that we had put together ended up being at a very unrealistic pace given his sort of additional requirements.
Yes.
And as a result, the recording process was really, really difficult for him. Mm. It was quite difficult for us, obviously, because it's not nice feeling like you put someone in a difficult yeah. situation.
Yep.
And it was frustrating for me as a director because I wasn't able to help him
yes.
bring out the performance that I knew he was capable of.
Yeah.
Because when we had the time to do 5, 6, 7 takes at a scene, mm. he was, you know, blowing out the water like he had been in the audition, but the production process just doesn't afford us that time for every scene. So
sure.
it ended up being something I felt quite guilty about. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that we put a procedure in place during the auditions to make sure that didn't happen again.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how we used to do auditions in person, basically. And yeah, the two key things I was always looking for were making sure that my style of direction worked for the actor in question. And yep. making sure that the actor in question was comfortable working at the speeds that we work at.
And have there been any absolutely outstanding standout auditions that you've had? And if so, what did those folks do to be amazing? Grip your attention.
I think the first one that comes to mind is maybe a little bit egotistical. In the first 3 seasons of Zombies Run, I also wrote the what we call the radio mode section, after you've played your main story, if you're still out running, we turn over to kind of comic relief, basically, which is the characters running this kind of post-apocalyptic radio station and just kind of wittering on about whatever.
Yep.
So when we were auditioning for the 2 characters in radio mode, Jack and Eugene, we'd seen people for individual auditions, and I kind of at random, if I'm honest, paired actors up to do a sort of paired audition later in the day, where they would just come in and do a bit of reading, a little bit of improvisation as well, just to see how cool. good their kind of rapport was.
Awesome.
And Reese and Nathan, who ended up getting the parts, they'd never met each other before, other than when I introduced them in the lobby of the building they were doing the auditions in and said, you know, come up in 10 minutes, we'll have a chat.
Yep.
And I remember just, you know, they sat down at the table we were doing auditions at, and they read a couple of scenes through, and they were really sort of sparky with each other, and they were really sitting fast on each other's lines at the end, so there was no sort of there was no sort of dead cadence. Everything was really, really quick, which was what I was looking for.
Super.
But then I just asked them to sort of talk in character and just discuss a film they'd seen recently, basically. And
right.
once they started doing that, it really came to life, and they were making each other laugh, and they were kind of really engaging with what they were saying. But they had the perfect cadence for the part, really. And I remember just kind of thinking, you know, it's one of the few times I've had to resist saying you got the part, like in the audition room, like that. I consider that to be like pretty unprofessional, because you've got a lot of other people to consider. But I knew I didn't need to see anybody else for those parts, and I had to kind of bite my tongue as they left.
Start of a beautiful relationship.
it did turn out to be exactly that.
And have you had to turn people down as well because of perhaps other parts that you'd cast before you got to their parts? Their voice was perhaps too similar in cadence or pitch or tone or attitude, because it just didn't work in the mix because of working in audio. Have you ever had that?
Sort of. That would tend to happen before we got to the audition stage, if I'm honest.
Right.
Usually, so now that we're obviously been running we're about to record our 8th season, but we've been running for a long time, the writers kind of know the stable of voices that we have, so often we tend to get, the casting notes will include some distinctive feature of voice, especially if it's a character that's going to be in scenes with someone else, particularly quite often.
Yep.
So that's sometimes dealt with in the writing stage. And then often a big part of my decision to bring people in for an audition or not is whether or not they do have sort of sounds too similar to people they'll be reading with regularly. One thing I have to be quite aware of is that the bulk of our audience is American.
Mm.
So the finer subtleties of the differences between, a North London and an Essex accent might be clanging like bells to someone from South, but to someone from Wisconsin might not be quite as obvious.
Interesting, yes.
So having to pay attention to making sure that the voices are very different for that purpose is great. It's also funny, actually, one of the things I've noticed is that Americans are a lot better than Brits at picking out which voice actors do multiple roles with different accents. Whereas we hear the accent and we're like, oh, that must be a different person. Whereas they're like, oh, Jodie and Nadia, the same person? Wow. So yeah, that's something that we normally deal with before we bring people in for auditions.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, if there's someone that's worth casting, I will find reasons to bring them in rather than find reasons to turn them away, if you see what I mean. I'm of the firm belief that if you just get enough good people around you, then your work's half done, basically. You can fix a lot in the mix, especially when our sound designer is as talented as he is.
Hooray for sound designers everywhere.
Indeed. Mark Pitton is an absolute magician. And if you can afford him and you need a sound designer, you should look him
glorious.
Up.
I will put, if you ping me his links, I'll put them in the show notes. Yes, do.
I'm not sure he even has a webpage if I'm like okay. this, but I'll ask him if he's still accepting
do,
work.
Do.
But yes, he's a wizard.
Groovy. And with regards to, so say you have fathomed, okay, yes, I want these people. What happens next? How do you communicate that? And what's the process from there?
Well, usually I email them. It used to be the day that I would phone them, which was a lot of fun. Very nice to give people good news over the phone.
Yes.
It's also good to have a written record of things. They would hopefully come back and say, yeah, I've set the part, I'm still free.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just book them in, basically.
Marvellous. And for those folks who do end up working with you, brilliant. For those that have been sort of rejected this time, do you still keep them on file and go back to them? Or do you only consider a fresh new batch?
No, I always keep people on file. Yeah. Often what happens is, usually the first time someone auditions for us, they're kind of not applying for the right part. Usually because we don't put out casting calls all that often. And often when we do put out casting calls, it's because the parts are hard to find. Because having been doing this for 8 years, what we do have is a very large black book of actors who've come in to read for us for the wrong part. And then the right part comes along and I can call them, ask them to do a self-tape. And then I can kind of cast them that way, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
So that's how... In a way, when I'm doing these kind of more open calls like I'm doing at the moment, I'm doing them for parts that are more difficult to cast. I need someone of a very particular age range or a particular background or a particular accent. But it's also just a really good way to put my toe back in the water and see new people that have come onto the scene, new people that have reels, and start kind of getting auditions from people and putting them into my list. So, I never throw a good name away. And often I also... I'm really like going back to people who maybe did a character in one of our earlier games that we don't produce anymore. And there's something that comes up that's great for them. Getting them to audition for something new like that is really something good.
Exciting.
As well.
So all is not lost. If you're cast and have a little bit, you can jump in again maybe. Cool.
Oh, now, absolutely. Yeah.
And you mentioned accents, because that's kind of, I'm a character actress through and through. And I know generally in certain circles, you know, if you want a Scottish or a Kentucky or an Australian person, you would get an Australian person.
Mm-hmm.
Do you tend to gravitate towards folks who have their natural accent, or are you open to all interpretations?
I'm certainly open to everything. I don't like to close any doors before I've seen what's behind them. But my preference is going to always be for a natural accent. And the reason for that is performances tend to work best in the room. And I should mention, by the way, I can't believe I haven't mentioned this before. When we record with all the actors present. We record ensemble. Usually we try to record the full scene in one take. I don't mean we only do one take. I mean we try to get it all in a single take.
Right.
With all the actors present, as though it were live theatre, just in a recording booth.
Okay. Yes, I was going to ask you what a recording day looks like. So, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll be very glad to come back to that then. But yeah, so because we record with everybody in the room, one of the main reasons that I do prefer a natural accent, although not exclusively, we do have a lot of actors who do their non-primary accents in characters. But one of the reasons I tend to prefer, if I can, get a natural accent is because there's just an extra millisecond that it can sometimes take in a reaction for someone to find the accent properly. And it's not even perceptible to the audience necessarily, and it's not even the fault of the actor. It's no technical flaw, it's no problem. It's like how they say when you're learning a new language, and they say you're never fluent in a language until you dream in that language. I think it's very similar with accents. It takes years and years and years and years and years of daily performance in an accent almost for it to be as natural and as fluid as your native accent. And there was just the odd moment in a very heated scene, a very emotional scene, or a very out there scene, a very strange scene, where the rhythm between the performers is so crucial to the whole take being usable that if I can avoid having that extra imperceptible millisecond of friction in a reaction, then I will. That's not to say in any way that people who are performing in their non-native accent are doing a worse job or that I don't like those performances.
Sure.
I'm certainly not saying any of that. It's almost just like
natural instinct kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's like, you know, it's like swimmers shaving off every hair of their body. I'm just always looking for that extra tiny bit of smoothness in the scene that's going to make it feel as natural as possible.
Cool.
So yeah, I think my first preference is always going to be people in their native accents.
Yeah.
But I think actually what we've ended up with, because we do work in London, and a lot of the accents that we get in the scripts are not particularly prevalent in the community we're looking at to cast from. We do often bring in people who are performing the accent rather than living the accent, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, cool, thank you. And with regards to, as we just touched on there, so people have been cast, you've given them the information, they've turned up for their recording day. What does that sort of timetable look like for recording time, and how long do you spend on recording it?
Well, we tend to record one episode in about 90 minutes. So an episode is usually somewhere between 9 and 15 pages of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to try to spend about between 8 and 10 minutes on a page. Often they go a lot quicker than that because a lot of the time the actors have been playing the parts for nearly a decade, and there's very little that we need to do to get it right, actually. So yeah, everyone comes in, people arrive, you know, 10 minutes before their first recording session starts. If we have some new cast member joining us, then usually what happens is we spend the first 5 or 10 minutes of the day discovering all the ways that everybody already knows each other from different jobs, which is very common. The world of voice acting is very, very small. Acting in general, I should say. A lot of the actors we work with wouldn't probably primarily identify as voice actors, actually. A lot of them work in theatre. So yeah, there's a lot of chat, usually sort of 5-10 minutes at the beginning. Then we get in the room, get into the sound booth. Mark spends a few minutes making sure everybody's mics are set up correctly, so the right height, the right distance. We try and make sure everyone can see each other comfortably, everyone is stood up comfortably.
I was going to say, it's a stand-up affair, not round a table. Yes, cool.
Again, my preference is for standing up. It's actually, it can be very difficult to express a lot of things correctly if you're not stood up, because you completely change the shape of your diaphragm and you really limit your range of motion. There are some of our cast, however, who have sort of additional requirements in terms of their working environment. So we have some people who record from chairs, and that, you know, that's something that obviously we're more than happy to accommodate for anyone that needs that kind of thing. So yeah, we tend to have the actors stood in kind of a rough circle inside the sound booth. Usually some of the actors who've been with us for a long time have preferred positions. Sometimes they prefer standing to one side of some actors and to the other side of other actors, because that's just how they've gotten used to the relationship between their characters.
It's like a wedding table situation.
It can be. Thankfully, they tend to sort of self-police and they just sort of organise themselves while I sit in the corner. See, I sit down, I have the scripts open, I have the schedule open, I have the text chat open, which goes to the rest of the office, and the sound designer. I have all my notes. Like, I have a whole bunch of... I have a very cluttered desktop when we're recording it. Each window gets about 10 pixels. We basically go through... we go through each script. We usually try to do each episode in chronological order with all the characters, but often we're unable to do that for various reasons. That might be that some actors can't make it at the same time as the rest, so we have to leave a beat for their lines. That's the most common situation. Other situations might be that For example, if we have a character who is in the first scene of an episode and the last scene of an episode but isn't in the middle five scenes, which is quite common,
mm-hmm.
I don't like having people sat around. I think it's a bit rude.
Sure.
So I tend to try to schedule it so sure. that, for example, we would record the middle five scenes of that episode at the beginning of the hour, and then the first and last scene of the episode at the yeah. end of the hour, so that actor can arrive, finish that episode off, and then do the next episode that they're in, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's one of the big challenges of scheduling, is making sure that not only is everyone in the right place at the right time, but that we're using everybody's time effectively, and yeah. that we're not asking someone to come in across London, do one line on one day, and then come in the next day and do one line, and then come in the third day and do 10 lines.
Yes.
You know, that's really not an effective use of somebody's time. So.
No, absolutely.
So, yeah, then we stand in the booth, we do the scenes, I give notes. We usually do each scene two or three times. And mm-hmm. Like I say, most of the time, everybody's got it right pretty much from the off, because these are characters they've lived with for a long, long time.
Yes.
Even some of the regulars that I think of as the newbies have been with us for 5 years at this point. So,
wow.
You know, we know these characters, we know the relationships. Most of the notes that I'm giving are helping the actors understand exactly where they are in the storyline of the entire season,
mm-hmm.
helping them understand exactly where they are in their individual character arcs, and very occasionally giving them sort of more practical notes like, you're saying this while you're in a helicopter, so you're going to need right. to raise your voice to go over the sound of the rotor blades or something
yes.
like that.
Yes, outdoor voices, indoor voices, intimate voices, yes, great.
Exactly.
Yep.
But the majority of the time, because these people have been working with us for so long, they tend to have the characters down, and we don't need to do too much work on that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we do each scene two or three times. In between takes, we turn on the fans to circulate the air inside the booth. We open the door. My job is to kind of keep things moving without
yes.
killing the atmosphere. You know, it's
sure.
One of the things I take great pride in is that everybody really enjoys the work when they come with us. We have a very safe and a very enjoyable recording atmosphere. I try and make sure that everyone has fun with
yes.
it. You know, we're not making Schindler's List. It's a game about zombies.
It's buoyant.
Yeah.
Yes.
We try and make sure that we all have fun, but at the same time. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So my job is kind of making sure that we strike that balance fairly. So usually at some point I have to indelicately interrupt some ongoing joke and usher people back to their microphones.
Sure. Get on with your work.
Exactly. and we just keep doing takes, basically. Usually at the end of each hour, we try and take a short break, usually just 2 or 3 minutes. Welcome the new cast members. When we do have new cast members coming in and joining us in the middle of a session, which happens usually about every hour, every 2 hours, Mark then has to, you know, change the microphones around a little bit, so there's a little bit of dead time in between those. Yeah, and then we carry on recording.
It sounds like a family kind of affair, doesn't it, really, how you're portraying it? Like, you know, old friends meeting
way.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Not many people get to work on something for 8 years, and it's a great blessing yeah. for me to be able to work with such talented actors
yeah.
for so long.
Superb. The thing that a lot of people are concerned with within audio drama circles especially is diversity of casting, and how do you make sure that you've kind of got that representation in your team?
That's something I'm very, very passionate about, trying to make sure that we have.
Yeah.
It's something that we've had to learn going along, if I'm honest. You know, this is a conversation that I'm very glad to have seen has really come into prominence over the last sort of 3 to 5 years.
Yes.
And it's something that we were, you know, a little bit behind the times on earlier as an industry, I think. And back when we started working on Zombies Run, which was in 2011, the conversation was a lot further behind. And I certainly, if I had a time machine, I would be really glad to go back and start instituting some more diverse casting practices a lot earlier in our process.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's something that we've definitely grown with throughout the process. What we try to do is I always try to make sure that where it's possible, where it's feasible, where it makes sense for the characters, which is in a lot of places, we're putting out an open call, which again isn't all the time. I try to make sure that we emphasise that we are especially interested in seeing people from underrepresented communities and backgrounds, especially if the character in particular has no kind of direct requirement, as it were. That is our way of making sure that we're overcoming our own kind of internal biases, that neutral equals white and neutral equals male and neutral equals straight and neutral equals cisgender. So, making a great effort to kind of specifically ask people from underrepresented communities to put themselves forward for roles that might not be specifically written for their community, as it were.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the one practice I've tried to really make sure that we have when we do put out open calls.
Are you seeing more? Are you seeing more folks from different communities come forward?
Yeah, we tend to, yeah. And we had, in particular, the first time we instituted that practice was actually, I think, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was for a particular kind of standalone recording. And we had a great response from that, and a lot of really positive feedback from the actors we ended up working with, who sort of said that they were really grateful for the way that we phrased it, because one of the hurdles they often came up against, they were saying, was that they or their agents were kind of disincentivized to apply for things that didn't specifically call out for performers from underrepresented backgrounds. And because they didn't think they'd make any headway, because they thought everyone would see, as I said, kind of neutral as
blinkered vision.
Exactly. So that really did result in we found some great performers who we've worked with a few times, and that worked really well for us. Actually, the other side of things that I should mention is that the writing team really put in a lot of effort to make sure that we have a lot of characters that are from traditionally underrepresented backgrounds and communities in the scripts, so specifically characters that require actors from those communities and backgrounds, and whose characters do speak to those experiences. One thing I do want to mention, actually, just to finish that thought, with regards to trying to ensure that we have diversity in casting, one of the things that I've tried to sort of engage as a personal practice is, where at all possible, making sure to speak with somebody from the relevant community or the relevant background when putting together a casting call that addresses that specifically, just to make sure that I'm not unintentionally causing anybody any even very minor harm by wording something insensitively.
And how do you find those people? Because, I mean, you know, sensitivity readers are being used a lot more, especially within audio drama circles. Where do you go to for that kind of help?
Usually just friends. We have, one of the things I'm very grateful for and very proud of is that Sector Start is itself a very diverse company. So recently I've just been able to ask somebody at work, really. But I also, there are existing cast members who might be able to help there, or just other friends.
Ground. Yep, not what you know, it's who you know then. Yeah, it's still the same.
in that situation, the sensitivity reader forums can be very useful.
Yes.
But I would encourage people to always, the old phrase is, nothing about us without us. I think that's a good thing to bear in mind.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And so what advice would you give to somebody who perhaps hasn't been involved in this kind of setup before, who's quite new to recording in that, or perhaps who's been in a remote situation to more than studio recordings? Is there anything you can offer as good advice for preparation?
The first thing I think is, it's very important to remember that your safety is paramount. And by that, I mean your kind of physical and your emotional safety. So sometimes when you're working remotely, you might be able to tolerate working conditions or like particular people that you might not be able to in person. So making sure that you advocate for yourself when you need to. So if you're tired, tell me. If you're feeling uncomfortable, tell me.
Yep.
You know, communication is the most important thing. But yeah, like my first priority, my number one job, is making sure that everybody who is working with us is doing so safely.
Yeah.
And that the situation isn't too uncomfortable or too tiring or too difficult, or that there's no one else involved who is causing a problem for other people. That's a big part of the casting process as well. But anyway, so the number one thing would be, when we're recording in a group, it's important to sort of advocate for yourself if you need to. Hopefully you don't need to, because if you need to, I'm not doing my job properly. But anyway, that's the first thing. I think the second thing is the old adage that acting is reacting is like super important when you're working in a scene with other people.
Yep.
And by that, I don't mean that like it's not like smell the fart acting like Joey Tribbiani. It's the like the most important tools you have are your ears, and like listening to everybody else's performances and trying to live in the scene with everybody else is how we're going to produce really good work together. I think it's not necessarily the cause of a bad performance, but it is often the cause of a little bit of, it can be a bit tiring to be working with somebody who just wants to turn up, adopt a power stance and like bellow their lines into the microphone the way they rehearse them in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
One of the key things about working as a group is establishing a communal rhythm, establishing an emotion that exists separately to each individual. Like we make the scene together, and the scene exists separately to all of us, and that requires us to listen and to buy in and to trust each other.
Yes.
Turning up to work with everybody else, not turning up to do your part, I think is maybe the most important attitude to have.
Love that. Yes, great advice. Brilliant. So when can we get the new version? What's your timeline for release and sorting and sending us out new amazing content?
The new season we expect to be released sometime in late spring, but we don't like to hold ourselves to dates.
Yes, good plan. Groovy. Well, huge thanks for giving up some time today from your crazy wonderful schedule of real life and zombie life and sharing your amazing expertise. And I'll put links to where folks can find the app, and if you are keen runner or even just want to walk and enjoy the audio drama kind of fest that is this brilliant app, then do jump in. But yes, thank you hugely, and good luck with the next however many series is going to happen. It's very exciting.
I look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Sarah. Well, you have a great day.
Cheers. And you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.